From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on, we're going to take a walk on the paranormal side, but here's what's happening. For days, solar activity has been very low, but the quiet seems unlikely to last as two big sunspots have unstable beta, gamma, delta magnetic fields that harbor energy for strong Earth-detected eruptions. So here we go. NOAA forecasters are estimating a 60% chance of an M flare and a 10% chance of an X flare. Now, if that X flare gets beyond like an X6, X10, we could have some problems with our grid. A magnitude 6.9 earthquake on the Pacific coast jolted a wide area of southern Mexico and Central America, killing at least four people, damaging dozens of homes there. A very sad story in Mountain Home, Idaho. Authorities say an eight-year-old boy's dad and his uncle are dead after they jumped into Idaho's Snake River to rescue him after the little boy fell in. The Elmore County Sheriff's Department says that the three were fishing in southwest Idaho when the men went in after the boy and they were swept away by the current. A 23-year-old man was nearby, jumped into the river, and was able to rescue the boy. But the father and uncle died. Gosh, that's sad. How much of the online data intercepted by the NSA actually belonged to suspects it was targeting? Not much. As we reported yesterday, 90% of the data it scooped up belonged to people it was not targeting, you, according to the Washington Post. Thus, the type of communications that were intercepted are the latest revelations based on Edward Snowden's leaks. Lauren Weinstein, who is an expert on the internet. Why do they do this to us, Lauren?
Yeah, I mean, what's really happening now is we're starting to get into the more complicated aspects of this, because when you look at the details of this particular data, it turns out that some of it was used to stop some really bad people. So this wasn't completely gratuitous information collection. There are some very specific terrorist activities that were stopped, which is in complete distinction from the mass phone metadata collection, where there was apparently nothing of any import ever stopped. In this case, what's happened is that you see that the lack of oversight has come into play. Because it could be argued that the original people who were targeted for these communication collections, in this particular case we're talking about now, that in many cases probably was appropriate. But what happened was that because they, you know, once you, you know, one of these guys talks to somebody and they talk to nine people and they talk to nine people and you have this expanding web of connections. And what should have happened is as those connections were formed and they were seen to be irrelevant, right?
These
are people who were not actually involved in this. They just by happenstance were connected in some way, just by you know, communication hops. Those should have been redacted. Those should have been removed. That should have been deleted. But what has happened is because of the lack of oversight, NSA has just kind of followed its traditional. This goes back all the way to its formation many, many decades ago. They just, once they get hold of something, they just want to kind of keep it. tomorrow might be useful.
And they might not even have listened to it, but they've got it.
Oh, they can't listen to they can't listen to more than a tiny fraction of what they have. And this is kind of part of the philosophy, which has been they don't really consider it to be, and this is the same around the world, other agencies too, they don't usually consider it to be real surveillance just collecting the information. They consider it to be surveillance when they actually listen to it. And so this is where we get into all these complicated problems now. Bottom line, you have to have more oversight. And once information is seen not to be relevant and to involve innocent parties, especially innocent American parties in the case of NSA, it really should be expunged completely.
You got it. Lauren, thanks so much. Appreciate that. Well, the giant retailer, Costco, has issued an order to remove all the copies of Dinesh D'Souza's best-selling book, America, Imagine the World Without Her, from the shelves of its stores nationwide. The book, in its midterm election year, is a strong rebuttal of the progressive ideology behind President Barack Obama's policies. And the co-founder of Costco is a major Democratic supporter. So all the books are gone. And as you know, D'Souza's been a regular guest here on Coast to Coast AM. And he just pled guilty to campaign finance law violations. A U.S. citizen is being tested for the Ebola virus in Ghana, which has had no confirmed cases of the virus in the current West African outbreak so far across Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. More than 460 people have died from Ebola. New York becoming the latest state to permit the use of medical marijuana, signed into law. The selfie craze, that's taking pictures of yourself with your smartphone, is taking the nation by storm. People then post these pictures on social media or text it to somebody they know. But it's dangerous. Some people take these pictures while they're driving, while they're walking. Somebody walked into a pole doing a selfie a few days ago. It's weird. So I thought I'd check in with our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Breggin. Peter, why are they so obsessed with taking pictures of themselves?
Well, I'm really pumped up about this, George. I think it's really interesting. I want to have a caveat, which is when I get a selfie from my daughter of her and our grandchild.
It's cute.
It's great. It makes my heart sing. But the selfie thing reminds me of a couple of things. One is the movie Finding Nemo, you know, who's a little clownfish.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene where there's a chorus of hungry seagulls. And they're all screaming as they want to go eat little Nemo. Mine, 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 mine. I think selfies are screaming, me, 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 me. I think that's clear as day.
Well, what is it about the person, though? What's in the person, Peter, that, you know, they have to be, I don't want to say it's bragging, but what is it?
I think it's just in part a shortcut to fame. You know, Andy Warhol said, in the future, everyone will be famous for 15 minutes. Now you take 15 seconds, you shoot a picture of yourself, you post it, you have endless fame. I think selfies, George, are fast food of fame. They're the fast food of fame.
They better be careful, Peter. I mean, I've seen people doing selfies driving the car. You know, they hold it right up in front of their eyes. They can't even see the road.
Yeah. I mean, people do such dumb things, and especially when something new is out. I mean, I think that's always been the case. You know, people learn through their painful experiences. There was this, the stuff about people encroaching on the big bike race in Europe, you know, trying to get a picture of themselves over their shoulder next to the bikes coming zipping by. But I think it's a me. Look at me. Here I am. Me.
I know a girl who did 120 selfies in one day and posted them all. Can you believe that?
Well,
unbelievable.
I mean, I really admire her.
All right, Peter, thanks for your advice. Peter Breggin, his website, BREGGIN.com. Imagine this bird, prehistoric. Scientists have identified the fossilized remains of an extinct giant bird. Here's the wingspan, 20 to 24 feet. That's a pretty big bird. You know, so when people talk about seeing the Thunderbirds flying around, maybe they're still around. That's a big bird. Up next, that's right, the investment advisor, Catherine Austin Fitz, joins us. Where is she? I'll tell you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Split show for you tonight in 2 hours, the first couple hours with Catherine Austin Fitz. We're going to talk about what the heck is going on worldwide with the economy and how it affects you. I mean, what can you plan on? Catherine, it's always a pleasure seeing you at conferences. You were in our studio some time ago, but it's good to see you again.
It's always great to be in the studio, George, especially when you're here.
Put your phone down, though. Don't do a selfie while we're on the air, Catherine. Come on.
Do you know something, George? I've never done a selfie.
Ever?
Ever. I've never done a selfie.
Did you know what it meant?
Yes.
You did?
Yes, because of the big brouhaha about the president and the Norwegian minister doing
that's
one.
Right.
So, yeah.
Hey, I'm getting a lot of emails about you from people who want to know why you are interested in UFOs.
Do you know how I got interested?
And I don't know how to answer them.
Do you know how I got interested?
No.
It was Coast to Coast.
What happened?
And the Coast to Coast audience, you know, I kept saying, look, can we talk about utilities, roads, bridges, financing,
structure.
Communities, structure? And they kept saying space, UFOs. And it took me a long time to realize that the problem in every community globally is the black budget is financing one community at a time and drawing all that money. It's financing everything. Yeah, exactly. So, so much of that money is going underground and into space. So if you want to understand what's going on in the economy, you have to look at it because it's such a big part of the economy at this point.
And hence, you went to a conference. You talked about some UFOs.
We had a great conference. And the reason it was so wonderful is one of the most wonderful experiences I've had. And there's a little quip I should send you about when we talk about Coast to Coast, because there were a lot of Coast to Coast fans there and listeners. But Richard Dolan and Dr. Farrell, Joseph Farrell were there, and they were sort of covering the, what I would call the asset side of the balance sheet. Mm-hmm. And I was talking the money, and you know, the money makes much more sense when you realize that trillions of dollars of investment are going on in all this stuff, and their stuff makes more sense when I'm talking about, you know, all the money. And so it was very integrating to sort of be able to lean on them to do that side and just explain the money piece. It was very interesting. We talked about the sort of the hidden finance system coming out of World War II, and then the black budget, and then what's been happening with the financial bailouts and all the missing money that I track. And you really see the integration of the financial system through what I call the financial coup d'etat.
It is amazing.
It's amazing. You cannot understand the economy today without understanding what's going on in space and the secret projects. You have to.
Catherine, 2008, the housing market busts, the derivatives fall apart, government bailouts of banks and corporations, and then we seem to like pull out of it. I mean, it just seems like, hey, you know, some people are going back to work, and there is a difference between the haves and the have-nots.
We shifted an enormous amount of capital.
But, you know, interest rates are still reasonably low. It seems that things are getting better economically. But a stock market at 17,000, housing going right back to where it is, where they're starting to finance again the same way they did before the bubble burst.
Right.
I'm afraid it's going to fall apart again.
Well, anything can happen, George, especially if you look at the risks in the economy. The big risk, I'm not very much concerned about global financial collapse. I am concerned about war and environmental disaster. So there are plenty of risks, and I think if you're a prudent person, you have to say, look, there's some small chance that these disasters could happen. Yes. Fukushima happened. Wars happen all the time.
All the time.
So you have to be prepared for those things. I do think that what happened, you basically saw the legacy governance system, so the sovereign governments. A huge amount of money over the last 20 years has been sucked out of the developed world, reinvested in a variety of things, including the emerging markets, including in the secret projects. All of that's what I call the rebalancing of the global economy. But you saw a huge amount of money pulled out of the developed world, and it's been shifted into new systems. And if you see where those systems are reinvesting, that's growing. It's growing like gangbusters. If you look at where it's gotten pulled out of, where we're not reinvesting, that's dying.
Right.
So I always say there's a world that's being born, and there's a world that's dying or fading away, if you will. And if you're in the world that's fading away, it feels like the end of the world. You know, it feels like a slow motion collapse. I call it the slow burn. If you're in one of the areas that's growing, it's growing like gangbusters.
Oh, you feel like you're booming.
Right. So the world is divergent, and that's the world. If you look into the stock market, yeah, the stock market's rising, but you have sections of the stock market that are just doing terribly, and others that are booming. It's that divergence again.
Well, what's keeping the market up so high right now? I mean, $17,000 is high.
Well, there's several things that are going on. If you look at how much money went into the bailouts and how much money is going into quantitative easing from the Federal Reserve, we're printing a huge amount of debt and currency.
Every month.
And if you look at where that money's being channeled, a lot of it's being channeled either into the stock market, the financial markets, or the areas that are strong in the market. The second thing is new technology. If you look at the explosion of new technology, every time we've seen an enormous spike in the S&P 500 or in the Dow, it was 29 new technology. It was the internet stock bubble, new technology. The technology we have coming out of the labs now puts all of that to shame. It's absolutely incredible. And it's not just that technology is coming out of the lab. It's coming out in many different areas.
And it's good technology.
It's good technology. It's robotics. It's material sciences.
It's all sort of blood, right, things like that.
Well, some of it's a little creepy. And, you know, but you have this explosion of new technology, which is doing wondrous things along with what's happening in the energy area to allow manufacturing to come back in. So we're seeing manufacturing move back into the United States and all sorts of things happening to increase productivity. So the technology story is good in terms of new technology, but to me, even more exciting. You know, I live in the middle of the country. I know you spend a lot of time in the middle of the country. We're now, I call it the digital heartland. We're now seeing that technology not just happening in Silicon Valley or around Austin or Boston. We're seeing that technology moved into the roads, moved into the bridges, moved into the railroads. And so we're really seeing a revival in the heartland, which to me is what technology is really, really willing, you know, should be about, is rebuilding the infrastructure, rebuilding things that are relevant to people in their day-to-day lives. So all of that is happening and it's productive. Now, the big thing, of course, in America right now is energy. The thing that makes the manufacturing possible is dropping in energy. And the energy costs in this country are so competitive relative to Europe and particularly Asia. And we're seeing an enormous boom with new technology in oil and gas. You know, we've
just surpassed Saudi Arabia for oil production.
Yeah, we're now having, you know, the pressure on the administration to export is tremendous. So they're you know, loosening up on export. The natural gas price is what's really given the strength. It's interesting. Wall Street Journal just had an article on the places in the country that are going to have the strongest growth rate between now and 2020. You know what number one is? Midland, Texas, 5.8% projected between now and I drive through Midland almost every trip, you know, out and back. It's booming.
It is.
It's unbelievable.
Didn't they have a gas explosion down there years ago?
I don't remember if it was Midland. I mean, gas explosions happen and, you know, and that's part of the business.
Plants blow up.
But the other thing that's happening is the leadership has made it very clear. They want to see an energy base that is robust. They don't want to depend on any one thing. And we're starting to see, you know, the renewables have been developed in fits and starts now for two decades. We're finally beginning to see the battery technology improve and solar energy and the renewable energies rise. So there's a, you know, that's a growth area as well. And finally, America, you know, I don't like how they're doing it, but America's the breadbasket. America, if you look at our water, if you look at our agricultural land, we have very powerful markets in agricultural all around the world. So there are, you know, I could go through the megatrends. There are a lot of areas in this country that are very strong. And what's very important, I go back to the word divergent. If you're in one of the areas that's fading.
Like retail, the internet is eating it up.
Well, here's what's happening. Retail is being reorganized. Remember, when we started to rebalance the global economy in the 90s, George, we rebalanced production. So we outsource, we ship manufacturing to Asia, we did all of this. Now we're reorganizing the distribution. And so what is happening is, you know, you see JCPenney and Sears struggling and, you know, and they may die.
They could be dinosaurs.
And you see Amazon skyrocketing.
That's what I mean, though. To me, retail is not Amazon because they don't have bricks and mortar. They've got a warehouse.
Well, but here's what's interesting. Some of the retail that's very bricks and mortar, Starbucks is unbelievably bricks and mortar.
Strong.
They have figured out payment cards and, you know, they literally have created their own currency. They have a more powerful currency than many nations around the world. So Starbucks is an example of the bricks and mortar that's figured it out. And that's why, you know, you need in the retail space to think about bits and atoms. You have to be excellent at both. But there's no doubt as you drive around the country, I really see this. I'm sure you see this in St. Louis. When you drive in from the country, the first thing you see is these new intermodal facilities going up with the trucking and the warehouse. And then you drive another half a mile and you see malls that are 50% empty.
All over the place.
And that's because those warehouses are delivering the online goods and the malls are getting hauled.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't need the goods immediately, go online. It's convenient. Pay a little bit for shipping and it's there. It's delivered right to your doorstep.
Well, but there's something else that's happening. And I have to tell you, because it was Coast to Coast where I first heard, it was you and me talking about this on Coast to Coast. We said, I heard you say it, Obamacare, you know, so many of the consumers in this country had $100 to $1,000 a month of discretionary income. Obamacare came in and wiped it out. And if you look at how many industries, and this you see this in the stock market, from gambling to, you know, to stores like JCPenney, et cetera, you're wiping out all of the business for all those stores and industries.
Let's talk more about this, Catherine, when we come back. And later on, you get a chance to call in to talk with Catherine Austin Fitz right here on Coast to Coast AM. Catherine, you're still the publisher of Solari, right?
Solari Report.
Putting that out?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Lots of people get great information from
that. Oh, our subscribers are fabulous. And a lot of them found us through Coast to Coast.
Super.
Yeah.
That's why you provide great information. You mentioned earlier one of your concerns, wars.
Yeah.
We're always in a war. But I have a feeling the next one's going to be a big one. It just seems like this planet is kind of encircling itself into something. Russia and Ukraine, Israel and the Palestinians, the Middle East with Iran and Iraq. It just feels weird to me.
It does feel weird. Well, you know, we started a process, George, 20 years ago,
and China,
where we started to rebalance the global economy. And so the emerging markets started to get investment. They started to rise. As they did, what they realized is, you know, the developed world has been squeezing. So let's use the American empire. We print money, U.S. treasuries or the dollar. We swap it for natural resources, which we get for cheap, and then the value of those dollars go down, and they're getting squeezed. So every American household's getting debased, but people all over the world are getting debased. They don't like it. So you're seeing real tension as that debasement gets more and more uncomfortable, more and more uncomfortable, and that's part of the debate about the U.S. dollar and what's going to happen to the currencies. So as we rebalance, we've seen a cycle of the emerging markets serving the developed world consumers, the American consumer. And now what has to happen is we're going to start to see the consumer in the emerging markets start to rise, the service sector grow, the consumer sector grow. And we're going to have to go back to doing more for ourselves and lower our consumption. And that's one of the reasons you're seeing in America more increases in manufacturing, more increases in whether it's oil and gas or agriculture. And that's us having to rebalance and sort of taper down on the consumption. And that's one of the reasons that the American consumer is feeling the pain so badly.
I'm going to give you age brackets. And for each bracket, give me your recommendation on what you think they should be doing for the present and what they should do for their own future. 20-year-olds
should absolutely invest in education and skills. And by education, I don't mean necessarily going and spending a lot of money and getting into student debt for university. I mean sitting down and saying, okay, what are the areas of the economy that are receiving real investment that are going to grow? Engineering is going to be a fantastic one. And investing in building the skills and experience to learn how to be great at that. That's number one. The other thing I would say is, you know, what your parents and grandparents, the way they lived is different. You need to be very discerning about what you spend money on, and you need to learn to do more for yourself because the tools are now available. And we're really seeing a reinvention if you go up and down our income statement and our balance sheet, you know, what it pays to have somebody else do for us or to buy or what we should make for ourselves. So there's incredible opportunities to build skills and education. Now, George, with the kind of we're watching a revolution of education, of what's coming online and what's accessible to a young person. So the thing I would say is turn off your TV, be very discerning about media. They know because they're listening to,
that's right,
to Coast to Coast, and use your time to build a very high learning metabolism, because the world is your oyster if you're willing to keep on learning. But you need to focus on the areas that are going to be growing.
30-year-olds.
Same thing, but I would say to the 30-year-olds, you need, in addition to investing in skills, you need to invest in health. We are in a very unique time where a discerning person can learn more. I'm looking and laughing at you because I know all the great health stuff you have on Coast to Coast. You need to be sophisticated and you need to be your own doctor. So I would start to also invest in health and consider starting your own business. You know, now is a time when you want to have entrepreneurial skills.
Right.
I would also get yourself around the world because the economy is globalizing, the culture is globalizing. You need to learn how to work with other cultures. So I would put some emphasis on getting out and about.
40-year-olds. Now the clock is ticking.
You better be saving. You better be saving and you better be investing. Hopefully, whether you started your own business or you started a career in the areas that are growing, You need to be saving and you need to be building capital.
50-year-olds,
you need to be enjoying yourself.
Yeah, and some are losing their jobs at 50.
Oh, here's the thing. We all need to plan, George, and this is why I'm so focused on continuous learning. You know, I was an investment banker, and then, whoops, I had to reinvent myself as a government official. Whoops, I had to reinvent myself as starting my own successful business. Whoops, suddenly, you know, I had to learn litigation. And then, whoops, suddenly everybody wanted me to be an investment advisor. You know, it's going to happen for all of us. And we need to be prepared. Someone said to me today, you know, take no refuge outside of yourselves. We all need to take responsibility to say, I'm in charge of my career. I can't depend on anybody or anything else. You know, I've got to add value, whether it's through my own business or as a professional or, you know, working for someone else. And that's one of the reasons I think 40, 50-year-olds are going to have to save more, because we have to be prepared to finance our own transition.
60-year-olds. I mean, in this case, I mean, you get close where you can take Social Security, but you can't live on that.
No.
Couple grand a month?
No.
So what do you do? You're 60 years old. You're ready to retire. Maybe you shouldn't retire, but maybe your company wants you to retire.
Well, you know, I started my next series of businesses when I was 60-year-old, George.
How old are you now?
So I'm 64. Oh, well, I'll be 64 in December.
Oh, yeah. Good. Happy birthday.
But I'll tell you what's really interesting.
I thought you were 43.
I said, no, you look like you're 43. I once said to a very good friend of mine, I said, you know, if I, instead of trying to, you know, sort of change the world and help, I just invested my money coming out of Wall Street and the things I thought would go up. I said, I'd be worth $39 million today.
Oh, my God.
And she said, yes, but you'd be dead. And I thought about it and I said, you're right.
You probably would be.
I would be dead. Yeah. I would.
And you couldn't enjoy it.
I would have depended on traditional medicine and I would have gotten stuck. You know, sometimes I'll bump into some of my old colleagues. George, they look like they're 100 years old. I mean, they look dead. They're walking dead. And, you know, that's why I say you got to keep on learning. You got to keep it. This is a world where things are changing and you've got to stay out there learning. The most important thing I ever did was when the litigation started and I shut down my company, I said, you know, I'm going to answer every email I get. And I started answering questions. People would ask me questions and I would answer questions. Then I'd go on the radio show. They'd ask me questions. I'd answer questions. Every time they asked me a question I couldn't answer, I'd go figure it out. Those questions, that flow of questions turned into my three businesses today.
Just like that.
Well, it took years. But,
all right.
But it's from serving other people and trying to be useful that you find out in a world that's changing. You know, it's that is what keeps you young.
If you were a 60-year-old.
Yeah.
And you've got Social Security coming in. I think you can take it at 66 now.
You can take it younger.
But still work and make money.
Right.
So would you get like a part-time job at Home Depot or Lowe's and just keep busy and have a little income coming in at 60?
Well, the first thing I would do is I would look up and down my income statement balance sheet. And I would say, what can I start to do to teach myself to do more for myself? So what are the things I'm paying other people to do that I could do for myself? You know, it's really funny. I used to have a friend who was complaining about her yields going down on her portfolio, and she was always complaining about her water bill going up. And I said, look, this is really easy. Sell some stock, build a well. You know, delete the corporations from, you know, you've been disintermediated. You've been intermediated. So disintermediate them out of your life. So the first thing I would do is say, okay, where can I spend my time doing more for myself? Because the problem with getting a part-time job, you go out, you get the money, you pay the taxes, you know, you pay for your clothes.
Sure.
You know, after all of that, you may be able to make more money just simply doing more for yourself. Okay, so I come from county in Tennessee where everybody does a huge amount for themselves.
I'm just going to go until I drop.
So the first thing I would do is I would say, you know, what can I do more for myself? The second thing I would say is, what is my purpose? Who am I here to serve? Who do I love working with? Because this is an environment where the worst thing that can happen to you is you end up working with people you can't stand. And so you really want to say, you know, who do I want to serve? What do I want to do? And then you want to get around them and start getting involved and being useful. And so now is a time to me to follow your heart in a smart way. I'm not saying be blind about it, but figure out what purposes you want to serve and then find a way to be useful doing that and then find a way to make money doing it.
See, some folks, for example, in the military, they get their 20 years in.
Right.
They lock in their pension.
Right. Right.
And then they get another job when they're done.
And they get a whole new career.
And they have a new career, and they still have income coming in from their military.
Right. And so that gives them a certain kind of stability, and they can be picky and choosy. But they keep the, you know, I have family who've done that. They keep on learning. They keep on learning. So.
Would you, if you were in your 50s, 60s, 60s, you have to be in your 60s.
I am in my...
Well, would you do a reverse mortgage?
I might. I would be careful. I would be really careful. And it really depends on the unique situation.
What I know about reverse mortgages is, one, they give you the equity in your house.
Right.
Up front.
Right.
You have no house payments.
Right.
You have to pay property tax.
Right.
That's about it. And... You can, the house is still yours.
Right.
Now, when you die, they take it.
Right.
And they sell it. They keep the money. They do whatever they want.
So you're liquidating
it.
Your equity, but it's.
What a great deal. You stay in the house. It's yours. And they give you the equity in the house now.
If there's any way I could generate income, I'd rather do that. I just think.
Why hold on to an asset that's not going to generate it?
Well, because the asset is your safety net, so to speak.
They paid you. They've given you a great percent of it, haven't they?
That's why I say it depends on the person, because there's some people where I think it makes tremendous sense.
You want to leave it for your kids. That's different.
I believe in leaving it for your kids.
But how many people are working for their kids?
Oh, a fair amount. But, you know, to me, George, I'm a big believer in family wealth. One of the things that I think gives people power is where families can organize to help themselves succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I have a great Solari report I do on family wealth, and I really encourage people to kind of organize. The greatest conspiracy in the world is a family, and where it works, and it doesn't always work, but where it works, it's the greatest risk management tool in the world. So I'm a great believer. I encourage a lot of my clients to start having dinners once a month with their family to talk about how they can conspire together.
Yeah. Do they pool their money together?
Sometimes not. They can make each other smarter. They can help each other. They can support each other. You know, they can be each other's bank. And there's a lot of family can do together to help each other be much more successful in economic
ways. You don't support reverse mortgages?
Sometimes it's, but here,
hold on. Let me see if I have any reverse mortgage clients here in the show. Check this out first. Nope. Say whatever you want.
Well, but I think, you know, for certain kinds of situations, a reverse mortgage is a great thing to have. So, you know, I do think a home and a home with the mortgage paid down for many people is an asset. It's a great asset. You know, it's money in the bank.
When we take calls next hour with Catherine Austin Fitz, one, your questions, but share some of your stories, your life stories with us on how things have gone for you financially and what your age bracket is and what you've done, to make yourself prepared for the future. Now, what about the 70-year-old who should have been established by this time? But what if they don't have much by that time? They're 70 years old. They get a little Social Security, maybe $1,500 a month, maybe. What do they do?
They need to start to network. You know, and it depends on where you are. If you can garden, you know, because fresh food is so important and there's so much that can be done, particularly if there are other people to team up and garden. But you need to network and you need to garden. So if there's a community center, if there's a way to organize locally to do things together.
Where do you live if you're only making $1,500 a month? Let's assume
actually,
they don't have a house.
I live in Hickory Valley, Tennessee. You can live very nicely in Hickory Valley.
Can you get an apartment for $700 a month?
Oh, less. You can get an apartment.
So, I mean, if you're 70, you better have a car that's paid for.
Yeah.
It's relatively reliable.
Or live in a place where you don't need a car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe assisted living or something like that.
Right.
I'm not old enough to worry about Medicare and Medicaid, but does that kick in for them?
You know, I hate to say this, George, because one of the things I had to decide when I settled the litigation in 2006 was, do I want to start a new business? Or do I want to just read for the rest of my life? So if you put me in a small apartment near a library.
You're going to read.
I'd be good to go.
You'll read. Read my books, would you?
I have.
Talking to the Dead, my cookbook. That would be fun. Anyway, so give me your overview of how you think things will go for us over the next several years, leading into the next presidential election and then out of it.
I think we're in for a pretty rough ride in 2015. You know, the economy has been weak in the first quarter.
Yes.
And we're seeing
some
lots
blame
of
the weather. Some blame the weather.
And weather weather absolutely contributed. The weather was very tough in a lot of places, as you know, George. So, but they have now adjusted the numbers twice. And I think in part that's going to make the second quarter look reasonable. But growth is slow, and I go back to divergence. There are certain parts of the economy that are very strong and others that are weak. The majority of the middle class and formerly middle class in this country are getting absolutely squeezed. And that process is going to continue. So if you're in sort of the parts of the economy that are fading and you're not shifting into the new one, you're in real trouble.
Sure. We need a massive tax reduction.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yes.
Well, we need to re-engineer the government money by place.
Absolutely.
And the reality is that's all stuck behind the black budget. You know, the black budget guys don't want to re-engineer. And you can't re-engineer the overt without dealing with the covert. And that's part, I think, of what's got the politics stuck. We have to rebalance up against the emerging markets, George. And there's a great Salieri report I just did. It's public. It was an interview with Steve Roach, a great former economist at Morgan Stanley. He wrote a book called Unbalanced. It's one of the best books on the global economy you can read today. And what he says, and he's absolutely dead on right, is we're going to have to let the consumer and service sectors in places like China grow, and we're going to have to reduce our consumption and increase our productivity. Now, you certainly see the industrial base and different sectors doing that. The question is, what's going to happen to the American consumer? And you're just seeing incredible pain. I think that pain is going to continue. 2015 and 2016 are going to be rough times. Right now, the Fed's still doing quantitative easing. When and if they finally, you know, ramp down, we're going to see interest rates rise. And for many consumers, that's going to be unbelievably painful.
What about the haves and the have-nots? If that disparity continues to widen,
it's going to continue to widen. That's going to be
the problem. Civil unrest.
I don't think we're going to have civil unrest. I think the number one issue is going to be income inequality. When in the beginning of the year, Harry Reid said, I'm not going to deal with trade agreements. That was the dead giveaway, that they are so afraid of the income inequality.
But if you get to the point, Catherine, where people will say, I'm going to take what you have. I'm going to take it.
Yeah,
crime
is going to
go up.
Crime is absolutely going to go up. I mean, we're seeing that. I'm certainly seeing that where I live. But if you look at the NSA systems, if you look at the power of digital technology and invasive technology to both collect information and manipulate, we are seeing the systems put in place that are very powerful to control, George. And every time you see that civil unrest sort of start to happen, the pushback is tremendous. And we've seen all over the country, 25 to 50% of any county economy is federal government money. So, you know, you literally see places where between Social Security, disability, food stamps, and all these different programs, you have a very high number of people who are being given enough government money to just get by, and that keeps toning down the
keeps the lid on the pressure.
Right.
Cooker.
I think the mechanisms to control are there to keep slow burning this, but there's no doubt about it. The pain next year is going to get vicious, and I think if you see the Supreme Court taking the restrictions off campaign financing, it's because there's so much fear about what could happen in these elections coming up.
Any predictions on 2016?
Well, you know, I really thought that we had the corporate guys say, you know something, we're sick of this Mickey Mouse sort of look of politics. We want a really slick, you know, Disney kind of deal here. And it's going to be Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush, and we're going to make this very corporate.
That's what I keep hearing.
Well,
but I'm not sure.
I thought that, and then Hillary Clinton came out with a book tour. And
which
her
was
stuff,
a disaster.
But her comments on Dead Broke George. Now, here's somebody who's been through many campaigns at the presidential and Senate. You know, I have never seen a blunder as bad as that by somebody that experienced. So what it tells me is, you know, Hillary really doesn't want to be president.
I'd like to be that dead broke, wouldn't you? Hey, we're going to take some calls and stories with you next. Catherine Austin Fitz. The lines are open. We'll be back.